Hello and welcome to Rundown, a podcast from Politics Home. I'm your host, Alan Tolhurst, and this week we're looking at the vexed issue of football governance, as the plans for an independent regulator to help protect the beautiful game have stalled, despite financial problems across the football pyramid threatening the future of clubs at the heart of communities. With me to discuss that, we have Mike Baker, Director of Advocacy at campaign group Fair Game, as well as Clive Efford, Labour MP, former Shadow Sports Minister, and member of the Culture, Media and Sport Committee, alongside my colleague, political reporter here at Politics Home, Tom Scottson. So, Mike, I'm going to start with you. Just explain to us what the idea of a football regulator is and kind of why it's really needed and why groups like yours are pushing for a regulator in football.
Well, I think the evidence that a regulator is needed is all around us. We only had to be at Reading last week to see why.
Yeah, we've had fans invading the pitch.
Fans invading the pitch, protesting against the owners, seeing the club go bust. I mean, this was a club that was in the Premier League, is now hurtling down towards League Two. But more importantly for Reading fans, it's the future of the club. Will it continue even to exist? And when you see that there's been Scunthorpe, there's been Southend, I mean, I could list Bury, Macclesfield, it's an endless flow of failure that puts communities, breaks their hearts, really, breaks communities' hearts. I mean, if you see what happened to Bury and the loss of one of the most traditional, you know, long-standing English football clubs, and generations of people and communities let down. And we must remember, it's also not just the fans, it's the businesses around there. It's the people who supply them with food. It's the people who do the transport. It's all the local restaurants around in the area.
Yeah, like a place like Bury, it is the heart of that community or was.
Exactly.
And so what would a regulator do in those kind of situations? What powers would they have beyond the current bodies that look after the leagues? What kind of powers would a regulator have to step in and prevent these kind of things from happening?
We'll see when the legislation is
published. Yeah, that's true.
What we're hoping is that the regulator will have the power to ensure financial clarity, so that it will be real-time financial reporting. I mean, at the moment, out of the 90-odd clubs in the football pyramid, in the league system, there are 72 different accounting methods. So even comparing like with like is almost impossible, let alone getting them on time. So firstly, we need clarity. Then they need to be able to enforce sustainability. And it's that sustainability that matters. It's about making sure that an owner is seen as a custodian, not as someone who's taken a risk with an asset that's their plaything.
Yeah, absolutely. Clive, I said you sit on the DCMS committee. You've been doing a lot of work on kind of football governance. Kind of where are we with the plans? They sort of started with a review by the former sports minister, Tracy Crouch. That, I think, reported in 2021. We were at the start of 2024, and the bill to underpin this still hasn't been presented to Parliament yet. So where kind of are we with these plans for regulator?
Well, the government have been kicking the can down the road a bit, particularly since the Crouch review. We're told it's imminent and that there are a few things being tidied up by Parliamentary Council on the detail of the legislation. Some people who've got some sort of idea of what's in it saying it's very good.
Yep.
So we're very hopeful about that. But what's the core thing we're seeking to achieve here? Well, the first thing is to have a regulator that's got the teeth to be able to sort out the football finance. And that's there's two key ways, I think is the way I would put it. The first one is the football pyramid and making sure that the Premier League are contributing a fair share to the rest of the football family, and that cascades down in a fair way and doesn't distort competition.
Yep.
And then the second one is the regulation of clubs to make sure that we don't get fly-by-night owners coming in, one to asset strip, and you know they see that the training ground, for instance, is very valuable. And
yep.
I have an eye on that for housing development. So running the club into the ground could result in, you know, £1 million of profit for them on property development. That sort of unscrupulous owner, but also the owner that thinks he's at the roulette wheel and you know, wants to throw money at the chance of glory.
Yeah.
And gets very quickly fed up with it because, you know, one, you know, his money is disappearing very fast, and two, it's not happening as quickly as he or she wanted it to. I've always said, you know, if they'd made that film Brewster's Millions and just advised him to go and buy a football club, the film would have only lasted 10 minutes.
That's that quote, isn't it? How do you make a small fortune from a football club? Start with a big fortune.
Start with a big fortune.
And so kind of on that, we've often heard this phrase, a fit and proper person, like the test to become an owner. And obviously we've seen that perhaps some people, in retrospect, we're not fit and proper person. So would a regulator have a bit more teeth to kind of really drill down into a person's the reasons behind them buying a club and where they've got the money, and also, I guess, a kind of an ongoing test that perhaps if they have that initial burst of funding, they kind of look fine, but then actually the money sort of dries up. And actually, would they be able to look at that, do you think?
Well, this is a really difficult area, but it must. So we need to make sure we have fit and proper people taking over our football clubs, because of the obvious, you know, examples we can all point back at.
Yeah.
The problem is, for the leagues, when they've got a club that's in financial difficulty, and someone rocks up and says, I'll cover their debt and I'll take this over, we're talking about a viable business that you want to remain viable. There's a lot of pressure to get the deal done.
Yeah, yeah.
You can't say, well, hang on a minute, we've got to spend a couple of months doing due diligence on you to make sure...
Because you've got to keep the show on the road if it's mid-season as well. Yeah.
Or you know, somebody who's been murdering journalists. So so we've got to make sure that we have a system where people, if they're flagging up, sometime in the future I might like to buy a football club, there's some preparatory work can be done. It's a difficult area, but we've got to get it right, because, you know, in too many examples of people who I would say don't have the best interests of our football at heart are getting hold of football clubs.
Yeah. Tom, obviously, as Clive mentioned there, that there's talk of this bill coming around soon. I think the sports minister, Stuart Andrew, appeared in front of Clive's committee and said, I keep using words such as soon. I genuinely hope that within the next couple of weeks we'll be able to present the bill to Parliament. But I mean, you know, this Parliament obviously doesn't have that much longer to run. We know there's going to be an election this year. It could be sooner rather than later. It could be in the autumn. You know, is there even going to be time that if a bill does get presented to get it through Parliament before an election, and obviously in all the change that would create as well?
I mean, that's the worry from, you know, a lot of stakeholders, a lot of MPs who have been lobbying for this, both from the Conservative and Labour side, because what we said is that it was a manifesto commitment from the Conservative Party in 2019. Of course, events took over with COVID-19 and a lot of legislation got put back. Liz Truss, when she came in for a brief stint as Prime Minister, shelved the plan. It then got put back when Rishi came back. Mm. And a lot of people I've spoken to, either in government or Labour MPs, or even people that are activists that have been really trying to push for this, and people, of course, on the DCMS committee, have felt that this was coming in just after the King's Speech in November, then December, now this month, and that even though Stuart Andrew, the sports minister, said it is imminent, there are many worries and real deep concerns that this could be shelved, as there are a lot of other pieces of pressing legislation that the government will see as a priority, as opposed to the Football Governance Bill, which could be a mistake because, as again, that football is probably our biggest cultural export. It is more of a social institution as opposed to just a normal private business. And this will affect not just ordinary voters, but this is such a huge passion. It's the national game, and that a lot of people see it should be seen as an absolute priority for the government to get this over the line, but also get it, make sure that the detail is right, because if it isn't done correctly, then it's going to have not just a huge impact on the economy because it raises billions of pounds, but of course on communities in vital swing seats.
And is there a fear, do you think, among some people that the clock is being wound down on this, essentially, that it's being kicked to the point at which it's just not going to have the time? You know, we're going to quickly be into February recess, then there's a summer recess, and then we expect the election probably to be called, you know, soon after. Is there going to be time, really, or is it purposely, but like other bills, being sort of pushed into the long grass in favour of things which are going to be, you know, key to the election, like stuff around the economy and immigration and the NHS?
It's a peculiar one, because most bills, when they are kicked into the long grass or pushed back, are because it's not in favour with a lot of the bulk of the backbenchers, whereas this is that it's got bipartisan support across the House, particularly even those that aren't even very keen in regulation. From my experience, you've got MPs that want maybe a light regulator, ones that want real teeth for it, and others that simply don't care. So it's those three groups. And that I think it's been kicked into the long grass mainly because there are so many issues that are happening with small boats, as we said, with pieces like housing legislation, that this one that seems to be shelved, not because of anyone's against it, just because of the lack of care from people as a priority.
Clive?
Yeah, there is cross-party support for this, and people are eager to get it in place. I think from our point of view, as a potentially going into government in the near future, we'd want to get this done. And if it needs tidying up afterwards, then we can do that at a later date. But the first thing is get it done.
Yeah.
But we shouldn't lose sight of the first milestone, which is the second reading. Because once we get through second reading, that's when we can start to set up the shadow regulator. And that's going to be very important. And
just explain what the shadow regulator
is. So the recommendation for the Crouch Review was that we get a shadow regulator in place as quickly as possible before we have the full-blown thing.
So it can hit the ground running when
when the regulator is actually established in its own right. And I think that's very important indeed. And so there's But once we've got second reading, there's an area where we've got to put pressure on the government to get on with that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I really want to back Clive up on that because clubs are going to need time to adapt. When you think over half of football league clubs, EFL and Prem, are technically insolvent at the moment. If their owner keels over tomorrow, they go bust unless someone else puts money in. So
I think people hear about these stories. I don't think people really realise quite how bad football finance is. It's horrendous, isn't it? Like you say, all those clubs being completely insolvent, and yet people go and thousands go and watch it each week and not quite understand the difficulties that is behind the scenes.
There's more money coming in, there's more people going to matches, and yet somehow they're losing even more money. You know, I mean, if I've been a CEO in the charity sector for many, many years. If I ran a business like that, you know, I wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah.
This really is shocking and unacceptable. But clubs are going to need time to adapt. And I say that because we represent a lot of lower league clubs, a lot of League One, League Two clubs and so on. The regulation is going to be quite a culture change, quite a shock for people. And that's why I think Clive's right. The shadow regulator being in place is really important to give people time to adapt, to get used to it, to understand what's coming and change their finances over time. Because it's not going to be you can't just fix it all in 6 months.
Yeah, it's being a change. Have you felt that there's some resistance? I know that some of the Premier League clubs have always been kind of keen to, I guess, mark their own homework. And we saw even just recently, they had a vote about banning deals between Premier League and partner teams abroad, that kind of perhaps clubs could have signed players on loan from clubs they had a partnership with abroad and kind of got around financial fair play rules in that way, and most of the clubs voted against banning it. Does that kind of another sign of why you would need it? You know, whether you think that decision is right or wrong, that's really not a decision for the clubs themselves. That should be a decision for a bigger body, right?
Exactly. And I think the what we're seeing in to some extent is the Premier League's beginning to divide amongst itself. There are different interests within the Premier League, and that's one of the reasons that this deal is never getting over the line. The EFL, as Rick Parry made clear the other day, feels it's got a gun to its head every time as something is put to it. So it's not them blocking it. This is disagreements among the Premier League. You've got the FA, you've got EFL, you've got the Premier League. None of them can agree with each other, and the Premier League has all the force, and it's the one that least wants change.
Yeah.
So in the end, an external, independent force that can just make, not interfere in the sporting side at all, but just make sure that it's sustainable. And I just want to address one issue. We get a lot from the Premier League about, we don't want to deter investment. Look at how successful we've been in bringing money in.
Yeah.
Well, no one's against investment, and it should surely make more sense to make sure that it's sustainable and well-regulated to attract investment. That's what you do in any other industry. Unless you're looking for cowboys, you really need a sustainable, well-regulated industry, because then your money is safer for the long term. Mm.
Tom, going back to the bill, such as it is when we see it, obviously Tracy Crouch's review was 162 pages, 10 strategic recommendations, as well as 47 other recommendations. How many of those do you think we're actually going to see in the bill, and what are kind of the key ones that perhaps might not make it into the final legislation?
So I think it's going to be a lot slimmer, and inevitably will be, than the Crouch Review. The Crouch Review was very broad and talked about a number of issues. This one seems to be very tightly wrapped around the fact that it's going to focus on financial regulation and the financial success of clubs. So, of course, the regulator will look at introduction of a new owners and directors test, setting minimum standards for fan engagement, requiring clubs to seek the regulator's approval for any sale, and most importantly, and I think this is really pushed for the last couple of months, is preventing elite clubs from joining a breakaway Super League.
Yeah, we're going to come on to the Super League, but yeah, that's kind of a big break in all this, and kind of a push for more regulation is seeing what could potentially happen with the Super League, right?
But one of the main things that won't be included at this stage, and it'd be interesting to ask Clive, and I think maybe a future Labour government will look at, is diversity. Now, this was something that was a big part of Tracy Crouch's report in 2021. It was in making the Premier League, maybe referees as well, and players, but also boards, were more representative of a modern British society. The only problem that I talked to a few stakeholders at the moment is he said that this is a fantastic idea in theory, and of course they want, you know, more women, people of colour, that joining boards. But the problem is that they have tried to recruit more different people or more diverse boards, but have found it a problem at the start to get people other than men or people that are just very invested in the club that are male fans. So they said that it's not something that they couldn't do in the future, but if this was imposed on them straight away, they might find it a difficulty. So that's one that might be shelved at the start, but I could easily see in a Labour government, if they beef up the regulator, this could be something for the future.
Yeah, Clive, what do you make of that?
Well, I think diversity is something we've got to work very hard at, and continually. I don't think there's any setting that aside. I mean, when you look at the representation of players on the pitch and compare that with the representation of players on coaching staff, management in the boardroom, talking about two different worlds.
Yeah.
I don't know how many black or ethnic minority managers there are in the Football League or the Premier League at the moment. I think there's one or two. There aren't many. And that, sadly, has stayed the...
It's always stayed in that kind of low single figures, hasn't it?
I think that we need to look at the procedures and the setup for creating coaching staff, getting people to take coaching badges. And I know that's been looked at in the past.
American has the Rooney Rule, doesn't it?
The Rooney Rule.
Which means that you always have one black or ethnic minority candidate on a panel for coaching jobs.
Yeah, and I think that those are the sorts of things that we've got to look at going forward. And it will be... my understanding is it will be part of the regulator's
remit
to do that, and I think that that's absolutely right. But its primary focus will be around finance, as Thomas said.
On the Super League, that was the kind of thing that really kickstarted a lot of this conversation.
Yes.
Post the Crouch review, when six of the English Premier League clubs were going to join this European Super League, it was blocked by UEFA, but then the European Court of Justice a couple months ago ruled that actually UEFA couldn't have blocked them. I think some of those clubs saw the backlash and have said that we would no longer be part of it. But those plans for Super League are not dead. They still exist. And a regulator perhaps would be able to step in that kind of situation and protect perhaps the existing kind of football pyramid from those kind of outsized kind of claims for a new league and that sort of stuff.
Yes. I mean, our understanding is that any club that wanted to join a new competition would have to get the permission of the regulator. And one of the key elements there is also about fan engagement and fan involvement in those type of decisions, because we've got what was called the golden share, so fans can block certain things. So it looks like that will apply to things like club colours, club badges and so on. But the important things are where it plays. So if your stadium, you don't do what happened to Wimbledon, up sticks and move them up to Buckinghamshire. And you don't just pop off into the Super League and, what was it that Chelsea sign said, we want our Tuesday nights in Stoke. that's a real fan. It's about being able to block all of that. In that case, it should be fairly straightforward, but it's how much authority will the fans just have to be consulted and then it's all down to finances and the regulator ticks it off? Or do the fans have real power to actually block those? And more importantly, it's not just about the fans, it's the communities.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm a Grimsby Town fan. I know it's an affliction, but it's the whole community there is behind the club. It's one of the few things.
He's a fantastic owner.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because he's not just about the club, is he?
Exactly. About the whole community. He sees the value of how we can actually make a positive impact for the whole area, for what is quite an ignored and derided area. And the club is one of the things that everybody's proud of. So, but will we still have the power? I mean, we've got a great owner, thankfully, so we're not in any problems. But if you've got a club where an owner wants to up sticks or move to another place or join a different competition.
Change the name. Yeah. Hold the whole Tigers, a few years ago?
Yeah, we had a good laugh at that, but it was cruel.
Yeah, but I think it's part of the problem that maybe regulation itself can't compensate for the fact that the Premier League has gone off into the stratosphere in the past sort of 20 years and is almost a separate business in and of itself, and that the kind of that community model of ownership was kind of broken in the 90s with big money foreign owners. A regulator, are they going to be able to roll back some of those changes, even if we don't want them, if some of them are good, roll back some of that stuff so there is a closer link? Or is it just kind of pushing against the tide, really?
It's about fair competition.
Yeah.
That's what we're really trying to say. I mean, effectively, what's being created and the Super League made really apparent is a closed shop.
No relegation.
Yeah.
Now, in effect, can you see any of the big 6-7 getting relegated? Back in the day, I'm showing my age here, I remember people like Spurs and Man United going down. That's not going to happen anymore.
Yeah.
So you've got...
Well, City and Newcastle are the most recent ones. But you're right.
Yeah.
Unlikely to go down now, I think, with their finances. Now. Yeah.
So when you look at all of that, and I've heard clubs talking now about being in the top 26, if you're one of those trampoline clubs, like if you look at the top four in the Championship, there are three of them are the ones that went down last year. You look at the bottom three of the Premier League, they're the three that got promoted last year. And that's happening more and more. So in effect...
Because that separation of finances between the top two leagues and the parachute payments, which most people think are necessary to prevent clubs going bust when they get relegated. But it does put them at an advantage when they drop down into the Championship.
And the whole basis of what the Premier League has made its money on has been built by over 100 years by the communities, by the Football League pyramid. They take players from lower down in the league that get developed. They take the competition and they exist on the fans' loyalty. I mean, no matter how upset Man United fans are with the Glazers, they're not going to go and support City or Liverpool.
So, as a Manchester United fan, I can confirm that is not the case. Yeah.
So it becomes more like a monopoly. You've got a monopoly of their affections.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's got to be taken into account. So it's about having fair competition. It's about acknowledging the role that the lower league play. And it's about making sure that clubs like Grimsby or like Millwall, Clive's club, actually can compete while being sustainable. Yeah. And that's the real problem at the moment. You've got a choice. You can risk everything and the club goes bust, or you can be sustainable and you'll get nowhere and you will never reach the heights.
Yeah,
and we're in a situation now where a big decision about the sustainability of the wider football pyramid is being made by the 14 clubs in the lower part of the Premier League.
Yeah.
And you know, by accident of a moment in time, they happen to be the clubs that are holding that ace card, and they are making a decision purely for themselves. When there are, 52 clubs in the Football League that have been in the Premiership? So everyone, and before the Premiership, you know, everyone's contributed. Even Millwall made it into the First Division. Everyone has contributed at that level, virtually, at some time in their history. And just by this accident at this moment in time, these 14 clubs are dictating the future of English football, and it just screams out for a regulator to come in and make an independent decision.
Yeah, so Tom, on this, there's this six-year new deal to kind of transfer, I think it's £900 million from the Premier League to the English Football League, but it's not really been agreed on, and there's a feeling that the Premier League clubs are putting pressure on the Football League clubs to oppose elements of the regulator to access this money. Rishi Sunak was asked about this when he visited Accrington Stanley earlier this month and suggested that a regulator would come in and unblock this. But it's kind of a bit of a catch-22 that this is not happening until there is a regulator. And so it kind of proves itself, I suppose, that the inaction from the government has led to this point where the clubs, like I say, are being held to ransom for this money.
I mean, I think that goes to the heart of the nervousness within government about it, that they are supportive, but they've seen that the problems that this has caused anyway between the EFL and the Premier League and the amount of money that it is. And again, with its volatile position in the polls at the moment, it doesn't want to get another thing wrong. And I think this could easily be something that it could mess up. And therefore, you know, this would be a huge problem, not just only in its strong seats, but all communities across the country. And I think it does, as you said, Alan, prove the point there that they need to bring something forward relatively quickly to sort this blockage out, because the government has been strong that if the Premier League and the EFL can't sort out this deal, then the regulator will. Mm. But again, when the regulator will come.
Well, you say that, but this is a big thing that we're all looking out for in the legislation. Will the regulator have the step-in rights to actually you know, make the decision to say, well, we're going to step in now because you, the Premier League and the EFL, have failed to come to an agreement about the, you know, the sustainability of the game. We're going to now, you know, look into this and make the decision. And then that's a very important point. The legislation will actually be hollowed out if the regulator doesn't have that power.
It's the power of those Premier League clubs that they know that they are, that between them they have such wealth generation and they're such an important part that they can use that kind of financial muscle. We talked at the beginning, you mentioned that the pitch invasion at Reading, Damien Green, the Conservative MP who sits on the committee with you, is a Reading fan, and he was talking about the ownership of Dai Young, who the suggestion that he's trying to, as you say, hollow out the club and sell on these assets. You know, he passed the test to become the owner and invested money, but he's got history of doing similar things in a club in China. You know, we saw back in the 90s, Brighton fans invaded their pitch to protest against the asset stripping carried out by their owners. You know, have we learned anything between the mid-90s and now, really, in terms of ownership?
Well, we haven't regulated to protect those assets, in my opinion. And I think we should. I mean, when I was Shadow Sport Minister, I put forward a set of proposals to actually designate training ground and stadia as assets that could not be sold by an owner for any other use other than for the current use, unless they provided an appropriate replacement and that the fans had an oversight of that. And I think that we've got to get to a situation where we can do that. So in planning terms, we actually designate those grounds in their own special category so that they're not attractive to people who want to come in and an asset strip in that way. That'd have to be brought in gradually because some clubs have debts against those assets.
Right, yeah.
But they, you know, they've speculated against it, but they shouldn't. And yeah, in the long term, we want to get rid of that. But in the case of Reading, I'm a bit confused because I think the former owners have rights to the stadium and the sports ground, so I don't know what he's trying to sell. I suppose lawyers will sort that out.
Well, but, yeah, potentially.
But I don't think he does own those assets to be able to dispose of them.
No, but it's the fans who lose out in the meantime, I suppose.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, it's always the fans that miss out in this current situation.
And, yeah, so
that's where we've got why we want more fans to have oversight.
Yeah.
Because they're the people with the long-term ownership, aren't they? The transigent owners come in, the managers, the players, they all move on, and we still passionately, you know, stay behind and love our club and want it to do well. It's a natural concern from the fans that they want sustainability for their club. They're the ones with the long-term invested interest, and that's what we've been lacking, is that those fans haven't had an oversight of what's being done to their clubs.
Yeah, Tom, as I said, I'm a Man United fan, so I've been saddled with the Glazers, and now Jim Ratcliffe or the Qataris coming in. You're an Altrincham fan, a very different model of ownership. Jay Davidson?
Jay Davidson Stadium, yeah.
Yeah, exactly, and a very different kind of model. But, you know, I look sort of like a bit longingly over at Germany and the way that their top flight clubs have fans own 51% of the clubs, and you can't have these big money owners. Has that ever been looked at? Was that ever looked at by the Crouch Review, and is that ever something that you think a British model, you know, more regulation could move towards, or kind of the Premier League club so powerful now that that is just not an option anymore?
I mean, there were a number of fan-owned clubs in the National League. I remember, I mean, there have been pros and cons of this. Wrexham, when they were in real financial difficulty, this is before Ryan Reynolds took over, they put enormous amounts of money. I remember on National League forums that people would say that they gave up all the money that they prioritised for the wedding day just to get a bit of their
ownership. That's how you spend your spare time, is it, on National League forums?
This is my, spare time. I mean, as an Altrincham fan, I've been very lucky. We've had, in my lifetime, very good owners. But there was definitely cases of Ebbsfleet United. I remember that they were a club and they were fan-owned and they couldn't decide, you know, what colours they were playing and what the badge was going to be. So there are difficulties with that model. But, you know, it's a very different type of football, the National League, where it is still more organic. It feels very much a community sport as opposed to something in the Premier League where you have more day trippers and it feels like more of a visit as opposed to something that you're passionately going to. So there is definitely a difference. It still feels that it's something closer that the regulator definitely could have an impact. But I feel that, and this is just going to a couple of different issues about how it could affect the regulator, and I have spoken to a couple of MPs particularly, is that, you know, standing on the terraces is vital for National League and lower league clubs.
Yep.
But also as well, and this is what I've mentioned, is even drinking on the terraces from a National League and League Two level, that this is something that would bring in huge amounts of revenue if done sensibly and suitably, but something that probably might not be looked at by the football regulators. So it'd be very interesting if a future Labour government, if they do win the election, could look at something like this to see that this would inject a bit more money into more family clubs like Altrincham.
Yeah, Mike, before we wrap up, I'm old enough to remember ITV Digital and the problems that were around that. You know, I think multiple clubs invested huge amounts of money based on this kind of very inflated investment they were going to get from TV rights from this new digital set of channels. And of course, that all went into administration, and I think 14 clubs went into administration in the years afterwards, many of them due to overspending, overstretching. It's something like that with the TV revenue is so vital to clubs at all ends of the pyramid. You know, would a regulator have an involvement in that, do you think? And is that something that the government is going to look at? Like, obviously, very commercial issues around that, but would a regulator want to step in on that kind of stuff as well?
I think the regulator has to look at all financial aspects of it. And you say about the ITV digital deal, Grimsby didn't go bust, but we were in the Championship. We ended up in the National League.
Yeah.
And that was all because of overspending and having to cut back after that went bust. We just couldn't compete. So the regulator has to have that financial intervention. And I think one of the things that's really going to be key now, we're hopeful the government will come forward. And I want to say a positive word about the government.
Yeah, sure.
And the DCMS, their engagement with us has been very open. What they seem to be about to propose, if they can get it over the line, seems very good. And we would fully support it. So, you know, well done to them. Well done to Parliament of all parties for taking action on this, but it has to come through. We've now got to make sure that the regulator is effective.
Yeah.
If you look at Ofwat, you know, the water industry was regulated. That didn't do it a lot of good. You know, we've got to make sure the football regulator is not the Ofwat.
There are quite a few toothless regulators knocking around. So, exactly.
So the sort of powers it has. So, for example, at the moment, we're a bit worried about the nuclear button. So if it's fully down to a license, well, if Man City don't consult effectively with fans and don't have appropriate representation from, you know, EDI and so on, they're not going to have their license taken away for that. And if you've no powers other than having the license taken away, then there's not going to be effective regulation. It'd be once in a blue moon that something would happen like that, and it'd be
blue
extreme.
Moon. Good pun there.
Blue moon. Yeah, that was not even deliberate. But never mind. So I think we've got to look at that. We're quite keen on a positive reinforcement as well. It shouldn't all be about stick. We see the need for some carrot in there. We work with leading experts from around football finance, and all sorts of other areas to develop a fair game index, which shows which clubs are better run on all different aspects, whether, you know, that's good governance, it's financial sustainability,
HR, and that sort of thing.
Yeah, all of those sort of things. If the distribution was more attached to that, so it's not just about spending millions of quid to get into the Premier League to get more money, but actually you could get more money simply by running the club well.
Yeah,
we think that would be a positive way of encouraging good governance, rather than necessarily just trying to bash people into
performance. Yeah, last word to you, so, Clive. Then are you kind of positive or hopeful about these changes, do you think?
Yes, so that, I think the time has come. I think the Crouch Review has pointed the direction. So the government hasn't got that much wiggle room. You know, it's got to really reflect what was in that report. So whoever's in government is going to have to move down that road. Remains to be seen whether the regulator will have the teeth. That's the key thing.
Yeah.
They can't let the Premier League continue to behave in the way it has, because it's outrageous, to be quite frank. And so the regulator needs the teeth to be able to sort those things out and to step in.
That's all I've got time for this week, but you can read all the latest on the big stories from Westminster at politicshome.com, and keep right up to date by subscribing to our 7-day week newsletters by clicking on the link on our homepage. Thanks to my brilliant guests, Clive Efford and Mike Baker, along with my colleague, Tom Scottson. Thanks again for listening. Please subscribe with your podcast and leave us a review. If you want to get in touch, then reach out to us on Twitter at politicshome or email us via news@politicshome.com. But for now, I've been Alan Tolhurst, and this has been The Rundown.